everybody, and welcome to Radio Radar, episode 124, the regular podcast from GamesRadar.com, where we talk about all the crazy features, news, reviews, and all that stuff in the world of video games. I'm your host, Henry Gilbert, H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter. You should follow me. And I'm here with...
Maxwell McGee.
Anthony Snyder.
Ashley Reed.
And live over Skype, we have I don't want to say guest because he could be a regular or should be. He's one of the newest members of the Games Radar staff.
David Roberts, hello.
Hello.
Yes. Actually, sunny Washington today, so that's pretty nice.
That's nice.
Ooh, global warming.
Mr. Roberts, why don't you give the listeners some background on you?
Well, actually, I turn 30 next week. I've been
Ashley so just had a birthday too.
I did, but this is Dave Roberts' birthday. Yeah. Happy birthday!
Yeah. Thank you. I've been writing about games for a couple years. Finished up my degree and decided I wanted to make things a little, take it to the next level. I've been freelancing with you guys since January of last year, and I don't know, one thing led to another, and here I am.
That's cool. Yeah, and you're you write a ton of features for us and reviews, which we'll get into the one of your reviews this week. But yeah, you just write a lot of features for us. People, if they're regular readers of the site, their name is definitely familiar to them. Even though technically you like started full time kind of recently, your name had been on the site quite a lot in the last year or so.
Oh yeah, I have starting in January or not January in. July, I think, was when I took a more active role. I was actually laid up in Boise because my son was born a couple months early. Oh. And that was really scary. We were in the middle of our move from the driest place in America, Arizona, to the wettest place in America, in Washington. Mm-hmm. And writing for you guys basically helped pay my way back to Seattle. So that was... Jeez. Thank you.
Wow, okay.
But you're out of the woods now. Everything's cool.
Yeah, no, we're good. We're good. Nice. Everything's been fine. So yeah, no, he's my son Jonah. He's awesome.
Awesome. So, well, I know you're a bit like me. You're a big Nintendo fan, right? I'm guessing.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, we need more of those. It's whenever I hear someone beat up on Nintendo, I always get really sad because I feel like it's such a one-sided argument. But yes, yeah. More Nintendo is better.
Me and you, we're comparing numbers on who's registered the most things on Club Nintendo, and I think it was a score of 360 to 320 or something.
Yeah, it was pretty damn close. I thought I had beaten you by a mile, but my when I copied it to Google Docs, it doubled everything. So I was like, "No, it wasn't."
But yeah, in a decade, I registered 300 something things. By the way, last week I told the story about how theoretically I had been taking the Club Nintendo slips from GameStop cases.
Whoa.
I'm not admitting to actually doing that. That may have all been fictional.
Allegedly.
But I did get one of the Question of the Week people also mentioned in the comments that the person works at a GameStop, and they said if somebody asked them to use it, if it's a used game on the shelf, they don't care. They're like, yeah, take it. They don't give a crap. So, oh yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of how I got so many. I know a guy who worked at a GameStop, and when Luigi's Mansion statue, I was like, crap, I'm 600 coins away. How am I going to do this? And he's like, no, don't worry, I got this. And just started feeding me codes, and I'm putting them in furiously. This one's registered already. This one's registered already.
That would be on the secret menu at the GameStop. They have secret menus at McDonald's or whatever. You have to go to the cashier and give him the special hand gesture. It's like, oh, you want the codes? And he pulls out a big bag. Basket full of slips of paper.
How many you want? How many you got?
Yeah, exactly.
Like a back of a trunk filled with little slips of paper.
It helps to be a Nintendo, to be friends with a GameStop employee. Though now you can't even do recent games. They just print it on the back of the cover art. So yeah, that's harder to steal. Really, you can't
oh,
steal
no.
And how can you even conspicuously lift the cover art and then take a picture of the code or something?
Henry.
I just want to see if there was a reversible cover. It wasn't.
and then you put it back.
It's like, oh, I guess this.
And then you do it like 16 more times.
It's like, maybe this one will have a reversible cover. You never know.
I only like to buy used games that are reversible covers.
It's like, I'm a glass half full kind of person. I may not have gotten it on the previous six copies of Fantasy Life, but maybe this one.
The reason that I heard why they put the codes on the back of the covers is because people kept losing their codes. Like they were just, where's my code? It's not in the instructions. It's like, well, you have the cover, don't you? It's on the back of that. Oh, okay. So,
yeah, that is easier to say. Just like you have the cover, you would know if the cover wasn't there, even if it was like, yeah. I suppose that's much harder to lose than a leaflet that hides behind your
I would bet
instructions.
And then who reads the instructions though? You literally just open the case, take the game out after about 2 minutes of struggling with that little 3DS case thing.
I wrote a whole article about missing instruction manuals this week.
I will bet money though that someone out there, it's like, so do you have your cover? No, I threw it away. Why would you throw away the cover?
I like to see blue plastic on my shelves. also, Ashley, as long as we're talking about having some small talk to start the show, you and I both went to a stand-up comedian show last night.
We did. We did.
I invited more people from GR to go, but nobody wanted to.
We all hate fun.
All hate fun. Well, actually, Maxwell is definitely a fan of stand-up comedy, unlike Lucas, who like just unequivocally said, like, I don't like stand-up. Like,
how can you
make a blanket statement like that?
I know, it's crazy.
He must actually hate fun. I was just joking, but now.
I've tried
comedy,
to.
Comedy, no, not a fan.
Yeah.
I just
don't like it.
I had fun once. It was awful.
Yeah, but we saw John Mulaney.
We did,
he's such a great stand-up. He is the best. He's so great. He had a ton of great jokes, which I'm not going to just repeat. I could repeat every joke
you said. You should. Why don't we just do that? Let's skip the top seven and just have you recite GR stand-up.
I think babies don't like me. Have they said anything to you?
Yeah, I like that one. And his deconstruction of the term, why buy the cow if you can get the milk for free, and how that's a stupid saying.
It's like, maybe if the cow asked you every day and you lived in a one-bedroom apartment with the cow and it was really hard to avoid the question.
Has anyone seen his show? Like, I watched the first episode, and it was just so painful to sit through.
Yeah, no, I've watched a few episodes, and that's why I kindly declined.
I should watch. Well, look, he was very defensive about his show. Like, he actually... He made a joke about, like, don't ever agree to do your own sitcom. And then when people laughed at it, then he goes, like, you know what? Fuck all of you. Fuck you guys.
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you.
He knows it's bad.
Yeah. A lot of first season sitcoms aren't great. Like, it takes time.
They gotta percolate.
I watched a couple. They weren't good.
But. Well, it must be stressful, like, because when he's doing a stand-up comedy, like, he gets to write those jokes and edit them and then just send them out there the way he wants. And I'm sure when you're doing a sitcom, it's like you write what you want and then you give it to the producers and they write what they want.
He actually, I think the joke was because he was talking to a kid who was like a kid who was in the audience, and he asked the kid what he wanted to do, and the kid was like, I want to be a comedian. And he's like, one piece of advice, no matter how much money they offer you, do not agree to do a sitcom. And the whole place was just like, ha, 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 your show was terrible.
But like I said, I don't want to repeat every joke he said. But it was a fun time. And we saw Ron Funches. It was his opener, who he's an up-and-coming comedian who is great. And I think he is, like, well, not even a secret gamer. I think he just is a gamer, but he doesn't, like, do jokes about it. But
secret
he just
gamer.
Threw in a joke set that is unrepeatable on this podcast. He talked about how funny it would be to make a parrot wear a scarf. And then he said, you'd look like a little chocobo.
I'm like, ha-ha! Caught that, you nerd.
I was like, how many people in this audience got that? Like, how much of the regular world knows what a chocobo is?
That sounds like a feature right there.
Mm.
Good.
That sounds like a lot of investigation.
Too much.
All right, but speaking of features that are good, we're going to talk about I felt like I was like David Letterman there. Like, talking about features that are good, and I pick up a piece of paper and
tap it on the desk.
Really big joke.
It's the top seven laziest storytelling cliches in gaming was this week's top seven, written by Connor Sheridan. And this is, you know, just covers things that you're just tired of seeing in games as a storytelling technique. Like, they just get way overused.
Henry, let me go ahead and stop you there. Because
I was actually the one who wrote.
Oh, I thought it was.
I'm so sorry.
I'm just gonna.
So
I'm taking off my headphones. Jeez. I'm gonna have
it's like I know what I'm not wanted.
I had seen Connors. Please don't go. I'm sorry,
Max.
Max,
no.
Did Sheridan pull the Sheridan switch on
he,
me?
Yeah, it says Sheridan now. He changed.
He just switched the author tag out to his name.
It all makes sense now.
I'm sorry, Max.
It's fine.
I'd seen Connor's name on a lot of stuff in the last few top sevens, and I made it.
I couldn't believe I wrote this either. I thought it was Connor.
Well, I maybe was suffering from number seven on this list.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, these transitions.
But okay, Max, why'd you write this?
This was just something it's something we talk about a lot just around at the office. Like, oh, it's this like this plot point again, or really they did this again. Mm. And it's just kind of a recurring annoyance I've had just in consuming games and consuming media, so I figured, why not give it a shot?
It's like, what a shocking twist for the 20th time.
Right, right. Especially
more like 200th time.
In the genre of gaming, which is already so sequel heavy. It's just like, here we go again, and it's going to be like these same plot points. Like, really?
Such as number seven.
Amnesia. I will say, while Amnesia like is overused and isn't the most creative plot devices, for me, like speaking personally, I love Amnesia. I love characters with amnesia. I love seeing it every single time because when you have amnesia, it means that everything is not as it seems. And it's always exciting when everything is not as it seems.
Yeah. Well, did you play Danganronpa?
Yes.
And, like, that is mega amnesia, right?
Right.
Dave Roberts?
No, it's... But they do some interesting things with the amnesia in that game. Like, the twists are definitely worth the cliched. I forgot what I do here or my name and stuff.
Yeah, we're bordering into too much spoiler territories for Dongun, but I at least like it's mass amnesia. Like
right, it
nobody
is,
remembers
like massive that, scale. And like
that's like okay, that's like magic.
The twist at the end of the first game was like okay, you know, kind of whatever. I think we all saw it coming a little bit, but the twist in the second game. Their amnesia all leads up to is so just nuts and out of the park and unexpected. I thought that was.
I will
good.
Say I kind of I had a lot of fun like towards the end of it could still be going, but Irrational's run with BioShock. Like I sat down to Burial at Sea and I'm like, okay, not all is as it seems. Let's start with that.
I know, and then that's kind of what happens when you do it too much or you see it too much. Then you're just expecting. You're like, okay, where's the twist?
My favorite
where's
the is
twist?
The RPG.
Is that guy evil?
Where they go. Oh, so what's your name?
Name your
character.
Yeah.
That's always my favorite.
It's Butts. That's my name.
From a gameplay perspective, I get amnesia, which is like, if you're a human walking around, like you don't, nobody needs to tell you how to walk. Mm-hmm. And if you're a professional soldier and that's your character, then nobody should need to tell you how to shoot a gun, like or how to have a battle. Like you should know these things, so you need a reason to explain stuff and just have exposition of just like, well, here's this world and
we gotta explain the world and
we're
the
in the middle of this giant space
magic,
fight and they've been alive for 5,000 years but now we're trying to kill them, and then also it then opens the door for a storytelling twist.
And the other thing too is that, you know, video games kind of have to start in the middle of, like, you have to start with the middle of the story, basically, the action. Like, books and movies can get away with a 30 to 45 minute, you know, introduction, essentially, whereas, like, games, it's like, if you're not right off the bat, then you're going to lose people. Right. So having amnesia is a clever way of going, like, let's throw you into the situation where you have no idea what's going on. Because you literally know as much as the character, even though you're a part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Or it would be clever if it just was used like half the time it's used.
Or if they actually, the funny thing is, the kind of amnesia that shows up in games isn't actually that common. The actual kind of amnesia that is common is you can't make new memories. So every day you wake up and it's like, you still think it's like however many years ago. Mm-hmm. That would be cool. If a game could make that work, like a Memento game, that'd be crazy.
I'd play that.
Oh, man. Or you'd keep, like, leveling down all the time. Like, every time you reload your save, you'd be like, well, you forgot all the stuff. Since
it'd be like every level would be the start of Metroid, where they take all your stuff away.
You gotta go find it all again.
All right, let's move on to number six.
So number six, this one I kind of gave like a blanket title, You're Better Than Everyone Else. That's sort of just like BioWare does this a lot where you're always like the Inquisitor or
well,
you're
this
the
means
Spectre,
the chosen. Well,
you're
it doesn't
the,
always
the child
mean,
of destiny.
Well, yeah, sometimes it means the chosen one, but in the case of Mass Effect, it means like. Or in some BioWare games, it means you're the appointed guy who's allowed to do whatever you want.
Yeah, basically, you're better than everyone else. You've got, you know, more, not responsibility, but like more, I don't know, duties, privilege? What's the word I'm looking for? You have more access than like the normal person.
Mm-hmm. You press pass.
Yeah, you can kind of, yeah, you can just go anywhere, do anything.
Shred up red tape.
Yeah.
And again, I understand it from a like a designing against game standpoint, because you do, you know, you want your characters to be able to go wherever they want, interact with who they want, and feel powerful.
Well, if you're just a dude in real life, you can't go up to a congressman and ask him, like, hey, what about that secret tunnel?
Right.
Like,
and then actually have him engage you in a conversation.
Yeah, there's no reason for him to do that, even if you were, like, carrying around, like, a sword or a gun. Like, also, too, if you're just a dude, like, I have a giant gun, and I'm walking up to a congressman, so what's up? Like,
you like, in handcuffs.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, you have to be the guy. But at least in BioWare games, like, it's kind of, there's a bureaucracy to it. It's just not like in Zelda where you're like, well, you got the sword. I guess you're that guy.
I guess you're the guy.
you're just the hero.
I'll give you our heirloom from this, from our place. Like, we've only had it for 2,000 years, but you hold on to it, child with a sword.
Like, I think in both Mass Effect and Dragon Age, it's like, well, at least Dragon Age Inquisition, there, it's like, there's indisputably a reason that they're in charge. Mm-hmm. Like, Shepard's like, I'm literally the only person who can save the universe because I have this special knowledge. It's like, that's a pretty good reason. But they can get away with basically anything. So it gets a little, to be
well,
a little too
for
much.
For Shepard, it's crazy because I would think, after they try to make the Mass Effect world feel kind of grounded, but once you meet a guy who's like, oh, this person has survived, like, 30 suicide missions. Like, he, his team should all be dead. Like, all of them dead. And here they are. And people should just be like, what the who even are you? Like,
are you even alive?
Call me the ghost.
I also joked with a friend about the Chosen One status in Zelda recently. How, like, if you believe the Zelda timeline as it is now, which it can be changed anytime.
Right.
And
for any reason.
And I fully believe they will change the Zelda timeline with the next game. But based on the current timeline, it is the story of their world that a boy in green will save the world from the ultimate evil, and this keeps happening. And then in some, like Wind Waker, they're like, oh, you're the guy in green. You're like, you look like the child of legend, or you look like this great hero. Maybe you are great. Like, if that was in real life and somebody was like dressed up like, well, I'm Jesus. Like,
maybe this guy be like, get out of here.
Yeah, they were just like, okay, well, you're insane. We're going to commit you. Then. Though then my friend countered like, well, that doesn't totally work because in our world, if somebody walked around being Jesus, then there'd have to actually be like literally the devil walking around with us in the, as Ganon. And so then if somebody showed up and was like, hey, I'm Jesus and I'm going to beat the devil, you'd say like, man, let him try.
Give him the benefit of the doubt. You know,
what's the worst that'll happen? The devil will kill another guy who says he's Jesus? Like, all right. Number five.
All right, this is where I feel like we start getting into real lazy territory, and that is audio logs.
Oh.
Audio logs everywhere.
So I blame Ken Levine for this one, for popularizing them and making, like,
damn
you, I don't
allow that.
BioShock,
please do.
BioShock wasn't the first game to have audio logs or like slips of paper. Like, there were definitely those slips of paper you pick up that's like, that you even saw in a game as good as Last of Us. Like, I would, when we'd have a conversation like, oh, is Last of Us best game of the year? Then I would knock it and be like, all the stupid notes you get where somebody says, like, I'm sad and my mom's not feeling good. I guess we got to move.
Right.
Like, those are fine storytelling, but it just gets overdone. But audio logs are even worse because it's like so many people's dying words, right?
I know. And they come in all sorts of shapes and sizes as well. The most egregious ones, I think, are the ones like in the Gears of War series, where they're not really audio logs, but like anytime somebody needs to call you or they need to deliver any kind of exposition, you have to do the walk and talk.
Oh,
we all know
God.
About the walk and talk.
I remember, in the pretty good Wolverine Origins game, that had the walk and talk. Like, and when it's supposed to take in the 70s, take place in the 70s, I'm like, I don't know if your comm would work that well. Like, Wolverine, I guess. I guess Wolverine. But But the audio logs, I think the South Park game recently just had some good fun making
fun
of audio logs.
Yeah, they lampooned audio logs pretty well. Because, gosh, I don't remember. It was either in the log itself or in, like, your character's reaction to the log. They just kept questioning, why would these audio logs exist? Why would this person take the time? Maybe it wasn't the log itself. He's just like, why am I doing this? All this crazy stuff's happening. I'm dying. I need to stop doing this.
That was, I think, probably like the best and worst audio logs I've ever heard were in the original Bioshock. Because when you get at the very beginning, this girl is making a recording. And in the background, it's like this place gets attacked and it's crazy. But then you're like, wait a second. She's out like at a party.
Right.
She's not actually saying anything. She's just like, I think I'm going to have another drink. And she's got just got this on the table just like playing. Like, who does that? No one.
Just hanging out with my tape recorder.
It's like,
It's like 1940s Instagram or whatever. Like, everyone's got their own inane thoughts that they have to broadcast. So that's what they do. They carry around these giant like gramophones or whatever.
And
I was gonna say I think the best one though, because this was just. It was supposed to be serious, but it was way too funny. Like, walking into a room, and this guy's recording one, and someone, like, walks in on him. It was, one of the bad guys, and someone walks in on him saying something
doing?
He shouldn't have been saying. Well, no, she's like, she's totally oblivious. She's like, oh, hello. He's like, oh, hi. Let me just turn this off. And then you find her dead body, like, right next to it. And it's like, oh, my God.
Let's go. See, that's kind of a fun use of the audio log, because then it ties back in.
Yeah,
it was pretty good.
Yeah,
that's a good joke with it.
Well, when you find it next to a corpse, it at least like tells a story. Like in Dead Space, you'll like find a hollowed out corpse, and then them saying like, "I'm going crazy. It's really hot in here. I told them not to get that marker. Why'd they do it?" the audio log reminds me of the great joke in the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where they find that note of saying, like, it's in the great temple of like, well, wait, it just says, he's like, maybe he was killed while writing it. He wouldn't write all the letters if he was killed by writing it. Number four.
Number four, this takes me back to some very specific moments in Diablo 3, specifically when you're fighting Asmodan in the big battlefield that I think was Act 3. But basically, anytime you would, because Asmodan's like this big, high-ranking demon lord or whatever, and anytime you'd kill any of his lieutenants or blow up any of his siege engines, like he'd project this holographic image of himself into your base, and he'd be like, hey, just wanted to let you know that I really don't care that you just killed that lieutenant, or, you know, those siege engines were old anyway, and I didn't really need it. We're still going to kill all of you. It's no big deal, really. I just, you know, just going to call and let you know. Like, he would call every single time you did anything just to remind you that he doesn't care.
He's like a whiny
he's
ex.
Still going to come kill you, and it's like, this, what, why are you doing this?
Whiny demon ex.
I'm
not thinking about you.
I wonder if they got inspiration from that from, like, say Die Hard. In Die Hard, they just have, you know, McClane and
I do not remember the
Hans Gruber.
Hans Gruber,
yeah.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thanks, Dave. Those two just having their tête-à-tête over the walkie-talkie, kind of to set up their, you know, their difficulties and give them a background for when they're going to finally fight each other. Like, that's, I can, from a storytelling standpoint, I can see that as a problem if, like, these guys can't be in the same room with each other because then they would just fight, but you need to set up that they hate each other.
Right.
So it'll matter more when you finally have them in the same room.
It's like Far Cry 4. Pagan Min is in the game for all of like 10 minutes.
Right.
But the entire time that you're playing, he's like, you know, he's hacking into your walkie-talkie or whatever, talking to you about Kanye West tweets and Kim Kardashian and stuff. So like, it is a nice way to build some kind of character development, especially when they're like, you're out, you know, blowing up outposts or whatever. You know, you're not engaging with them directly, but it feels lazy just because it's like, well, we got Troy Baker. We got to do something with him. Throw him in the audio booth and get some dialogue.
You've got a villain. You need to set up that they're villainous. You need them to, like, act evil and do evil things. But I don't really get that upset with my villains if the worst that they're doing is, like, annoying me on Twitter, basically.
Well, unless they're crazy, there's no logical reason for them to call the guy who's trying to kill them and taunt them unless they're nuts. Like, they shouldn't be saying, you know, you kill those guys, I don't care. Like they should be just going like, we got to think of a plan.
Yeah,
to kill
they should
this
just
guy.
Not He's, just don't pick up the phone yeah. if you really don't care. Or it's like just talk to the other lieutenants and let them know not to make the same mistakes or do something.
At least give Andrew Ryan credit because he does call you. God, Bioshock's not doing so good on this list. But he keeps calling you through the entire thing, but he's very clear like, I fucking hate you and I'm very upset that you're here. You should not be here.
Right.
I'm going to get more and more angry the longer this goes on.
He knew you were coming and he also, like...
That's fine.
Andrew Ryan is an egotist. Like, he is just like, you can't beat me. I'm the best guy ever. Like, as Ayn Rand said, an objectivist is the most powerful. And he's just defending himself that way. So that's why also, like, Andrew Ryan loves to hear himself speak. Like, that's why he became a guy who runs basically a cult underwater. Like, because he loves to talk.
And he's definitely a little bit crazy.
Oh, just a little.
Just a smidge.
That's such a, man, that's such a great scene when he, this has almost nothing to do with this top seven, but the great scene when he just says like, oh, you're trying to kill me? Good luck. And then he turns on the light and shows like all the political enemies he just murdered. Like, see, look, here's their corpses strung up. I guess you can try.
It's like, holy shit, dude.
Oh, damn.
People forget that he's really awful. Like he is a very bad guy.
His death is almost a little funny because it's almost like he thinks he can talk you into not killing him. And it's like, how's that working for you?
Okay, number three.
All right, this one I think we're all pretty tired of seeing, but it's the we need to set up a sympathetic backstory for our main character, but by golly, we don't want to like waste any time doing it, so why not just throw in a good old dose of dead parents or a dead wife or just kill his whole family. Just do everything. Mm. That's just like, that just feels like we want to play the sympathy card.
What are
like
some
the cheapest way possible.
Egregious examples?
Well, like, Shadow of Mordor, I think, is going to be the most like recent one that's going to be at the top of
everyone's Ezio. Game. Ezio from Assassin's Creed.
Yep.
God of War.
Yeah, God of War, too. Like, it pops up all the time.
At least God of War pays off in a good way by the end. Like, they just didn't, the family didn't exist just to be like, he's sad or he's angry. The end. Like, at least there was a story reason for them being dead more than just why this guy gets to kill 300 people and nobody cares.
Right. And, you know, I guess I empathize with him, I guess, because his family is dead. So he just turns into a crazy murderer.
And it is interesting to think about, like, if you hadn't seen that scene and you just saw the rest of the game, like, this guy's a maniac.
How it would color your impression of the character.
I played the demo, I remember when it first came out, and I was just like,
of God
I
of War?
Pull him in. Yeah, I was like, I can pull that guy in half. Why am I doing this? This is great.
Why am I so angry?
I know, right? He's like,
I think that's a big difference between Bayonetta and Kratos. Like, Kratos, like, just rips, like, he just tears the wings off of characters mm-hmm. and then tears their jaw off. And, like, he's so angry. When Bayonetta, like, she kills just as many things, like, right. humanoid things. But she doesn't, like, she's like,
classy.
I'm having fun. It's a dance. Whee! Yeah.
She also doesn't, it seems like she doesn't do it when she doesn't have to. Like, I remember watching a scene from God of War where he's, like, chasing a girl through this entire level, and then he's like, oh, well, I need something to hold up this door. Not going to bother grabbing any of those corpses I just left behind. I'm just going to stick you under here and listen as you scream while you get crushed by the wheel. It's like, was that necessary? Did she do anything to you?
Well, it's all over the top. That is what God of War is. But yeah, they just Shadow Mordor, going back to that, like that.
This just seems like such a like a go-to, like a thing just to fall back
on.
Well,
his family doesn't even get to live for like 5 minutes. No. Like,
you get to smooch your wife, you get to sneak up on her, give her a kiss, and then
how to
stealth. Boom!
That was at least a clever way to do stealth, but then to teach you, like, here's what stealth is. Like, that is the smartest thing. Like, that's the only creative thing they did in that cliche.
Right,
and then immediately, like, your throat is just fucking cut on screen. Yeah. Same with his son, neither of which you have much setup for. Like, no, they're dead. They're dead. Like,
it's like, is there really, was there no other way to, like, establish some sort of sympathetic or, like, give me a reason to like this character? Like, it's not even that I'm given a reason to like the character. I'm just given a reason to empathize with him because of his situation. He might still be an asshole. I don't know.
Well, the players want to play. They don't want to play. They don't want to see more exposition. They're like, get me into this level. Like, but then I'd say just like those are the types who would have just hit X to skip anyway. So
right.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I would say at least Nintendo doesn't do that all that much. Like, they don't even, like in Ocarina of Time or games that have more of a story, they don't just kill everybody. Like, here's why you should care. Samus's dad is dead. Like,
well, they just, they're just like, you're playing the game, you're going to care. I mean,
they save it for the end.
Their character avatars are usually pretty, like, blank anyway, so you can just sort of fill in the blanks in your mind and sort of make up your own reason.
Choose your own adventure or background.
When I said it was a positive last year in an article, the like, isn't it great that Nintendo has like so many female characters compared to all these other publishers, as proven by their the roster for Smash Brothers? And like, people agreed with me that, yeah, that is pretty cool. But their characters, that not all of them have a lot of background. They're just player character,
right?
Female mode. Like, they're not. They have as much character as the men, but they're not like an incredibly deep, affecting character like, say, one of the stars of Life is Strange, I'm assuming.
Yeah, but still,
we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about Life is Strange. But sorry,
I'm like, whoa, we're jumping ahead here. What am I doing?
All right, number two.
Number two, this one also comes up a lot, and I think it would be interesting to see just more like variations or more games that don't use this. But basically, you're stranded in some sort of hostile territory, whether it's like an island full of zombies, or it's World War II, or it's, you know, an alien planet full of hostile aliens. You're always like in a space. Everyone around you is pure evil, and you can just murder them without having to worry about any of the consequences, and just have at it. I mean, obviously, that's fun from, like, a gameplay perspective, again, just because, you know, you want to run around and murder stuff.
Woo, killing!
From a gameplay perspective, they need to throw thousands of enemies at you at once, so why not put you in their home?
Exactly.
We can't stop. Oh, crap, I forgot the name of the enemies from Destiny. What are they called?
It's such a memorable game.
It doesn't matter.
Rogues. Robert, Dave's right, it doesn't matter.
But basically, that game starts with, we can't stop here, this is blank territory.
Yeah.
Wow, that's some of the great writing of Destiny right there.
Those wizards came from the moon.
Yeah, it's right on the wizards came from the moon level. But like, sorry, Dave. Yes.
No, just I will say that like when a game is able to flip that on its head, though, makes it interesting. Like Spec Ops: The Line did that, where you are behind enemy lines, but there's also
There's some depth and some nuance there. Like you can go around and shoot everybody you want, and like that, you know, that's still an option. But there are going to be consequences.
Yeah,
I actually think that one game, and I mean the option is never there for you to go crazy killing stuff. But I actually think Final Fantasy X, they are basically like, here is an environment where everyone hates you, and they're all going to be suspicious of you, even though you have no reason to hurt anybody. They think you're about to, so watch yourself.
The prime examples I have this are the all the Dead Rising games, which has dropped you into like it's Zombie Town, kill your way out of this, like, and that's at least fun of like, it's like kind of an all you can eat buffet kind of thing.
I mean, that game is like built on excess. That's like the theme of it.
Just like in an all you can eat buffet, like when you normally limit yourself to three strips of bacon if you'd ordered pancakes and bacon, here's a giant tray of bacon, and how can you not like take like two handfuls of it or two scoops, I guess, not handfuls. You wouldn't put your hands in the bacon at a buffet. Yeah.
You don't know me.
Or in all the Arkham games too. In all three of the Batman Arkham games, they just dump you into. You're in a place that you're surrounded by criminals, so that's why Batman will beat up every person.
Literally
he needs,
everyone.
Even though the real life Batman would kind of go like, "Oh, hey, you're a civilian. I won't beat you up. But
please don't. I'm innocent." Everybody
But the only way Batman can interact with 99% of the world of Arkham is to break their fucking legs.
He has no other settings.
Awesome.
His parents are dead, okay?
Dead parents. He doesn't kill. He'll break your legs and your skull.
That's true.
But he won't kill you.
If you turn on the bat vision and look at their heart rate, they're fine.
Because some things are worse than death.
He will cripple you for life.
I know. That's so bad. Just to have like, they want to have their cake and eat it too with those. Like that, Batman will beat the shit out of you and seemingly kill you, but technically you're not dead because it's a catch-22. Batman can't kill people, so he can do whatever he wants, but it can't kill you.
That's like, a little messed
up.
Like,
what if they like weirdly like they took that like way too far until it got really weird? Where like Batman literally couldn't kill anybody no matter what he did. Like, you'd be in a car accident with Batman, you'd still live. Like, he can't kill you
in
he's
horrible
like, oh,
agony.
Yeah. Clear.
Well, that's that is kind of a that's one of the lamer aspects of the upcoming Arkham Knight, which I'm very excited for. Mm-hmm. But like he just so the Batmobile has to shoot things because it's a video game.
Right.
But so what's he doing? Oh, drones! They're drone tanks, really? They're all drone tanks.
Ripped from the headlines, Henry.
I guess. Fine.
Very topical.
You got me. All right. Number two, one.
Oh,
easy
level jumping.
Sorry,
this one.
Strange.
I'm sure we've all been disappointed by this one at one point or another. But it's when the bad guy is the same bad guy from the future or from the previous games, not the future.
No,
but,
Nintendo. They were doing good until right now.
You'll be playing along, you'll be having a good time, and then you'll think you defeated the real bad guy, and then oh, lo and behold, from the shadows. It's that guy from the last game.
Dr.
Dun,
Pepper.
Dun, dun.
It's Dr. Wily again.
Mr. X.
It's Andross.
It's Ripley.
Yep. Oh, Ripley's back again.
For the 15th time.
Yeah.
Mecha Ripley.
Sorry?
Just can't kill it.
Yeah.
Just can't kill it. It's like, well, we need a villain. Somebody you'll hate. Somebody you'll be excited to fight. But the game's going to end in about a half hour or so. Let's just put Ripley back in there. It'll be fine. You just fight Ripley.
I mean, it's fan service kind of thing or what they think fans want to see. Like, they want to see this dude again. Like, this wasn't a game, but in Final Fantasy VII Advent Children, Sephiroth did not need to be there. And in fact, Sephiroth, it was worse that Sephiroth was there. But
he just, like, popped
out.
He literally popped out
he,
of nowhere.
He killed him in Final Fantasy VII. Like, he was.
Like, he should have been dead forever.
You know what? I know the explanation for this, and it's bullshit. Like, it makes it worse. I'm like, no, screw you.
Well,
this is dumb.
The plot of Advent Children makes no sense. I believe what Shinova had more clone babies, and that was those three guys, and then their death summoned Sephiroth.
No, it was that they were facets of Sephiroth that sunk into the planet, and then they were recreated, but they were incomplete Sephiroths, and they were trying to become complete Sephiroths, and the two were shitty ones. But the one guy apparently was good enough so that Sephiroth could possess his body, and I'm like, fuck you. No, seriously.
I also love that Cloud just had, like, his motorcycle that should have no room for it had, like, an armory. Like, it just had, like,
like nine swords.
I'm glad I brought a dozen swords with me. I'll need those on my motorcycle.
The 12 sword, the one that turns into all the...
Boy.
Oh, wait! They all get back together.
And then they all, like, shoot around Sephiroth and independently slash him.
That was the Omnislash.
Well, I think Sephiroth even says, like, oh, I'll be back. Like,
he fucking does. And it's like, god damn it.
And, I mean, yeah, all the Mario games are guilty of this. It's just always Bowser. But I think I'm cool with that. I think at least because they...
I mean, because those games are so narrative light anyway.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't feel like
as
egregious.
Bowser is functionally new in pretty much all the core Mario games the last decade. Mm-hmm. Because, like, all right, it's a different Bowser battle. This is not the same. Or it builds on the last ones.
Right.
Like, especially Mario 3D Land and 3D World, like, those give you, like, a Bowser boss battle. It's almost like an Uncharted level of, like, run towards the camera. It's all cinematic. Crazy shit keeps happening in the background. I love, like, more people, if you haven't beaten 3D Land or 3D World, you're missing some, like, the best level design Nintendo's done, like, in the last decade. But all right.
Good stuff, though. Good list.
Okay, so that is the top seven for this week. We post it every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, so keep checking it out on GamesRadar.com. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, the weekend news, previews, and some of the big reviews. We'll see you in a second.
Radio Radar is brought to you in part by Audible.com, where you can download audiobooks like Extra Lives, Why Video Games Matter, and Ready Player One. Download a free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/GamesRadar.
Hey, and we're back with the current events segment. All right, good. Yeah.
Love this.
Bam. You know, I don't think Dave heard that, did you?
No, I didn't. I couldn't hear a single thing. Yeah. I just hear a bunch of people humming.
Well, it was a very epic song, Dave. I'll tell you that.
Sucks you missed it, man.
So, yeah, the current event segment. Though, first, because we have Lorenzo here, I want to talk, and also Max, I wanted to talk about some new video projects we've been doing lately.
Ooh.
Well, first, Max, I believe we launched a 5 out of 5.
First? Wow. There's several fives and Fs in there. First to Five, it's a video series that we just started that Lucas and I are working on, where we basically find like an old or current or whatever, just any game that has some sort of competitive aspect to it, and then we jump in the studio and maybe we're familiar with the game, maybe we're just figuring it out right there on the spot, but we basically play it until one of us gets 5 wins over the other person.
Mm. And the first episode is live right now.
The first episode is live on the site. We recorded another episode today, and I'll give listeners a sneak peek.
Oh boy,
we're gonna be playing the Super Mario Kart for next week's episode.
So the first to beat is it battle mode or?
We didn't do battle mode. We did races. Some races. Okay. We start out with races with the CPU, and then we just do some one-on-one races. So we got a little bit of mixture in there. But we did end up getting into a discussion about XXX and XXX State of the Union or State of the Nation. It literally brought me to tears in the middle of the thing, and I was not able to drive for a few seconds.
Let's not give away too much more.
That's all I'm going to say. We had a lot of fun. And it's the one we did before that, X-Men vs. Street Fighter, was like a half hour long, and I think this one was like half the amount of time. We ended up burning through those races pretty quick.
Yeah, you should.
You can see it on the site, and it's on our YouTube page, too. The games are our YouTube page, which, hey, why don't you just subscribe to that?
You should.
It's so easy.
Smart. Yeah. Smart thing to do.
Also, if I may suggest subscribing to things, our Twitch channel, which we are going hot and heavy on that. We just passed 10,000 followers.
10,000 followers.
Which is
just
great.
On your last stream there, Henry.
Yeah, Lorenzo, you've been investing more in it than me. I've just been doing like it one a week regularly now for 2 weeks, and really 1 week I didn't even do it. But
you're like, I can just take a little while and just play Nintendo games? Hell yeah.
Lorenzo, you run it. You tell everybody about it.
Yeah, before we had like 1 day a week. Now we're doing four total.
We just went all in
a week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 3:30 to 5 Pacific time. Monday is Lucas's day, and I'm also on that most of the time. Tuesday is our very own Dave Roberts and Connor Sheridan taking that one. Wednesday is the prize day. Mm-hmm. If you guys are watching, so.
We still have a lot of great stuff to give away.
We have a bunch of stuff to give away.
We have lots of Minecraft books.
So many Minecraft books.
Give away games and books and prizes and all kinds of other stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Thursday is Henry's Day.
Yeah, which I wanted to do more as retro-focused stuff. But then this week, I just wanted to play wrestling games because the world of pro wrestling had upset me so much. I was like, this is a hot topic. I need to cover it.
I mean, we really just kind of play whatever the hell we want to play.
Yeah, it doesn't really. And we have fun. I think I'll be on it more, too, on the days that aren't mine because it's, I don't know, the streaming is fun. We have a good time.
It's true. And if you follow, you might get a shout-out from us.
Honestly really hard to do those shout-outs at a certain point. Like, during the last one,
they start coming so quickly. Yeah. Like, who did it.
Because first I have to be like, oh, God. I am playing this game. I'm talking. Mm-hmm. I'm reading the chat. Yeah. And then I hear, blah, 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 blah. Oh, no. let me stop my point and just say, yeah. So, that's a good question, guy. And it's, hey, smoke weed every day. Thanks, buddy.
I was lucky to have Lorenzo in the last stream because that was pretty much all I did. I was like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, Ashley, stop reading every follow for the follow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good time. So if you guys enjoy Twitch, go check us out every 3:30 to 5, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Pacific time. All right, so the current events, there are only a couple big news things I can think of other than just the sad news of the closure of our friends at Joystick.
Right.
No longer around. Like, technically, as I understand it, the brand will still be part of AOL, and they're going to fold it into Engadget, that site. But
basically means you might be able to find the logo somewhere on like the company page.
I would hope at least their archive exists and will just be there.
Oh man!
But, But yeah, the joystick, you know, all the but all the employees there, joystick and their sister site Massively, the MMO site, like,
aww,
sadly pretty much done this week. Like, so our thoughts are with you.
Yeah. That was all the time they got? Holy
AOL
crap.
AOL moves fast. Well, it's not like with magazines. Like with magazines,
Well, just like was a joystick, they reported on their closing because they found it out from another report from a different site. Like the AOL didn't even tell them that they were shutting down. Really they reported on their own closure.
They reported on their own rumor.
Granted, it kind of sounded like they knew or they like had hints of it and they were like,
I would think the writing would be on the wall for that for a while. But yeah, that to write on the own rumor of like, well, there's rumor and it was like the rumor and speculation of like they would write about of a game before they're on site. But yeah, I'm gonna miss that. They had some fun content on there. They were a great,
some
reliable news site and good dudes.
Some good dudes over there.
All right, but in happier news, there was the announcement of something that seemed inevitable: Lego Avengers and Jurassic Park
together, like as a game, one game.
Indominus Rex or whatever it's called.
Oh, right.
It's like some new
look.
Dinosaur.
Jurassic World sounds. I don't want to be the cynical guy who hates every sequel being made of something from my childhood. But seriously, that trailer looked dumb. Dumb as hell.
It sounds really dumb. I'm with you, Henry. Yeah.
You're not excited. Chris Pratt, he's on a motorcycle.
I love Chris Pratt.
With the dinosaurs. They're working together.
He's flying V-ing it with the dinosaurs. Awesome.
Well, also, like, Chris Pratt doesn't have to star in everything. Like,
yes, he does.
The talk that he's got,
he blew it away on Guardians.
I know, but the talk that he might be the next Indiana Jones, like, that's crazy.
Yeah, his voice isn't deep enough.
That one should really
Ford.
Just die with Harrison Ford. Just
no,
like,
yeah, no. They shouldn't do that.
At least it's not Shia LaBeouf, so I think we dodged
a
bullet on that one.
We did. But I just worry it's going to be Shia LaBeouf levels of overexposure, and then he's just going to go crazy like Shia LaBeouf did.
Yeah.
But Shia LaBeouf wasn't actually talented.
He was getting holes.
He's not bad. That guy's easy to make fun of, but there's way more. There's way more people with less talent than him who've starred.
Sure.
That's true. I didn't say that's actual cannibal Shia.
No. I'd heard this argument of like, why do you hate Nickelback? Well, because they're not the worst band in the world, but they come to represent something you don't like on top of being not good. Like That's what Nickelback is. but back to the actual news.
Legos.
They're making a Lego Avengers game, which is great. Like, when you think back of how big the Avengers film was, that they didn't have a game, like, it's just ridiculous. Like, it's nuts. What are you talking about?
They had Marvel versus Capcom 3. Thanks, Capcom.
And now you can't even buy that unless you buy a used copy of
that's
it.
That's true.
You could never download anything. but they didn't have an Avengers game. No, sorry, Dave, yes.
I'm waving a
Dave
Batman.
Dave brought Batman to the recording.
He's just waving his Batman and Riddler figures.
They are Lego shaped.
Taunting us.
Well, that Lego just owns everything now. That they they're too big. It's scary. And there's like, and I love the Lego movie, and I was ready to hate it because I was like, a Lego movie? What? It's just Legos hanging out? That's a commercial. That's literally a 2-hour long commercial for Legos.
Henry, what if it was a really good commercial?
And it was. And
it was.
The best. Also starring.
It was so good.
Also starring Chris Pratt. Though apparently it was not good enough to be nominated for Best Animated Feature this year, which
come on,
Oscars.
That's like the Pixar Award. The Pixar Award for Best Animated.
There wasn't a Pixar movie last year.
I know, but still. They don't know what to do when there's no Pixar.
Well, they should have nominated
Lego. Oscars are full of shit anyways.
I know.
Don't worry. Tell them. Yeah. Stupid Oscars.
I bet Everything Is Awesome will win the Song Award, though. But the Avengers, there's an Avengers game, I would guess, based on both of the movies. I think in pretty much the way Lego games work is that they're just like, okay, every film. This will be just every film, and we'll pick the best parts of it. Like, as set by Lego Star Wars, which, like, set the tone for all this. And when those could prove, like, a children's game cannot be awful.
I liked it when they didn't talk, though. I liked it how in Star Wars they didn't talk. Do they talk in Batman?
They all talk now. Well, it's the cast of it's basically the cast of the animated series, like doing the voices.
Jeez.
Even Tim oh shit, the, Tim whatever, who did the voice of Superman for the Superman the Animated Series, like who was on Wings, right? You guys remember Wings?
Right? No, I do, Henry.
Okay. I'm sorry,
Ashley. You don't remember Wings? I mean, it's been off the air for 16 years, so I get it. But,
sorry.
All right. But yeah, and Jurassic Park will apparently be all four of the Jurassic films too, which I hope there's a part where you do gymnastics to hit a velociraptor.
I mean, is it really
is
Jurassic
just
Park?
Be Lego Jeff Goldblum? In the game?
Yes. Must go faster.
Oh, please.
Please. How much money do I need to put down to get the actual Lego Jeff Goldblum
this.
Figure?
I bet it'll work like the, you know...
Does it come with a tiny droplet of water that he can hold in his little Lego claw?
I bet it'll work
to demonstrate chaos theory.
I bet it'll work like the law, the Lord of the Rings films, because they'll just have voice clips of the characters from all the films. Like they won't have new dialogue, just this voice clips. All right, and the other big news, I guess, Ermac for Mortal
Ouch.
Kombat X.
Whatever.
Bit of precious.
I don't even
want to
talk about
it. There was some other fighting news, too. Like, they showed the two, like, that and Pokken Fighters, Pokken Tournament.
Pokken. You can also call it Pokken.
Those got announced. They announced a bunch of new characters via a stream. They just streamed it.
So for Mortal Kombat 10, they showed
X.
X.
It is
marks
not
the
10,
spot.
It's X.
That's right. Like, I'm sorry, Ed. I'm sorry. They showed a Reptile earlier in the week, and then they showed Ermac like yesterday. And then for Pokken, oh God, what did they? That was like last Friday, actually. That was at the very end of last week.
They're already doing location tests in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
And yet they haven't even announced it for anything but arcades and anything for outside of Japan.
I mean, they're doing the same for Tekken 7 as well. Harada's nuts.
He just
does whatever he
you
wants.
You think it's just Harada that he's like, I don't want to share this? Like, I'll announce it for America when I feel like it.
I think that's exactly what he's thinking.
Until I'm done with the arcade version that I'll only release in Japan,
right?
I'll then tell you non-Japanese people.
Then you may have the
about.
Pleasure of, you know, savoring my creation.
Like, but you put it on the internet. We all saw it. Well, like, whatever. Don't care.
You all can use the internet?
Japan is guilty of this outside of Harada.
I don't know. I think Japan has a pretty firm grasp on what the internet is.
Okay.
No. I kid.
But I'm excited about Reptile and Ermac. They both kind of look pretty much the same. They had pretty short little trailers for both of them. They show off some x-rays. They show off some fatalities. Reptile, he's still got that slow-moving, like, acid ball projectile. Ermac's still picking people up with his brain. For Ermac, I don't know if they went back and showed it for Reptile, but for Ermac, they did show, like, his three fighting variants.
Some fighting stances for Ermac, too. That's a cool thing with Mortal Kombat.
I think that's really interesting. I really hope that ends up panning out for him.
Yeah, they have a diverse roster, but not like, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom huge.
Right.
But each character kind of plays, like, it felt like, from what I played, like 50 to 60% different, just based on what, like, the one that comes with the large thing that has the little thing on its back.
Farrah and Tor.
Yeah. In that case, like, one of them can just have Farrah, like, not on Tor's back.
Tor all by himself.
Tor just, like, that really changes it.
Or she's just, like, cheering him on from the sidelines or something.
Yeah,
there are some moves.
Like, yeah. That's cool.
And so it means he has a new X-ray move, too, because Farrah's part of his X-ray move. Mm. And so, but yeah, I'm looking forward to both those. I guess Mortal Kombat's going to be out pretty soon.
Who do you guys want to see next? Do you guys want to see next Mortal Kombat?
Melina.
Shang Tsung.
Melina.
I'd say that's probably pretty good. Yeah, Shang Tsung. He's pretty old, though, in Mortal Kombat 9.
Yeah, but he just sucks the life out of one dude.
I was told that Liu Kang, Johnny Cage, and Sonya Blade were the only ones that survived Mortal Kombat.
Liu Kang did not survive.
They all died. Okay. All of them died.
Johnny and Sonya certainly did not because they had a child.
No, yeah, no, they survived. Cage, and I think, Kung Lao survived as well because they've shown him. But yeah, Liu Kang did end up.
I'm cool with no Liu Kang.
Biting it.
Well, there might be zombie Liu Kang, which zombie Liu Kang is a canonical thing. He was like around in Armageddon or whatever.
I mean, let's be real, right?
Where has Raiden been announced yet?
He was one of the
announced
first
a while ago.
He's got LEDs on his hat now.
I want to see a new Shao Kahn.
Yeah.
What I'd really like to see is them to really go all out with Shang Tsung, because his thing has always been he can copy like the other fighters. He can transform into other fighters. But it's always been a little janky because it's not like the SNES cartridge can't load up every single fighter to participate in one fight. So he could only transform into like one or two other people. I think it would be really interesting if Shang Tsung could just on the fly, like, now I'm Raiden, now I'm Liu Kang, now I'm Reptile, now I'm this guy, now I'm this guy. Just, like, swap between the entire cast.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
That'd be nuts.
That would be super nuts.
Man, that game is so gross.
Like, it looks so gross. That's why I want Melina. I want to see her, like, eat some guy's face.
Bones.
Baraka.
God, you actually see, like, the gristle and sinew of his just face falling off. Like,
that's that next gen particle effects. It's all going into like teeth popping out of people's mouths and eyeball liquids.
Entrails.
Ugh.
All right. So some previews this week. I think there were only two biggies that Lorenzo and I saw. First off, I want to talk about Codename Steam, which I've talked about before on here, but I played the multiplayer, and a beefy demo just got released on the North American eShop, which you should totally get. If you have a 3DS, you should 100% get. So Codename Steam, in case you don't know, it is a new, brand new series. You know, people complain that Nintendo makes too many sequels. This is not a sequel. Totally new. From the guys who made Advance Wars and Fire Emblem. It's a strategy game that is very much in the style of XCOM, except it's a little more interactive. Like, it has, like, third-person shootery elements when you walk around. And
so it's Valkyria Chronicles.
The creator of the series is very defensive when you say it's like Valkyria Chronicles. I don't think it totally is. It kind of has its own feel. Yes, it is very familiar of Valkyria Chronicles, but it has its own feel. Well, especially like it has an Overwatch mode that I'm like, well, this is XCOM.
I know. I've seen the game, like people talk about it. I've seen the game advertised, but I've not seen it in motion, and I am actually really interested in it. So.
It looks real cool. I downloaded the demo last night, and like it got these really cool looking comic book visuals.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, stylistically it is just great, I think. Like, so different, especially for Nintendo, that it's basically them, the Japanese art team, trying to draw an American comic book characters all interacting with each other, taking place in the 1900s with steampunk stuff starring characters from classic books of that age. And I also played some of the multiplayer mode, which kind of works like speed chess, and I didn't realize how fast it moves. It's just like you each take turns, and it's the same of just like it's a versus strategy game. Like, you take your turn, then they take their turn, but you have 60 seconds. And like if you have a four-person team and you don't know exactly what you want to do, you will run out of time. Like I was facing the other person I was playing against, and we were just staring each other down. I'm like, all right, all four of my guys can definitely kill this guy. Okay, walk, walk, walk. Yeah, I think it's the right place. Shot. Okay, let me plan this next shot. I get to three. I'm like, oh, 5 seconds. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Shoot him. Shoot him. Yeah. Shoot him with a gun.
But, yeah, it's really great. I love the soundtrack, too. I think it's going to be – I worry, you know, people are going to overlook this, but just because it isn't – I think Nintendo sometimes is damned if they do, damned if they don't. Because if it's a sequel, then it was like – be creative for once.
You guys never make anything new.
Try making something new. But then if they make something new, they're like, why isn't this Advance Wars? Where's the new Advance
Wars?
What's
that new Star Fox coming out?
Or,
Star
Fox. Like, Rusty's Real Deal Baseball came out last year, and it's probably the weirdest, most inventive thing Nintendo has made in a long time, and nobody played it.
I played it the time.
Of course Henry
when
played
I tried
it.
Bringing,
it's so good.
When I brought it up in our game, in our Platinum Chalice Awards, like, Andy in the UK was just like, is this a game? Are you making this up? What are you talking about? A divorced dog begging for money.
It's so dark. I love it.
Yeah. It's so wonderful. But lastly about Codename Steam, playing it on the new 3DS, like, that's the way it's supposed to be played. Like, it's because the camera control, the moving the camera around is integral to the game, and you could use it. You can do it using the bottom screen, or you could do it using the ABXY, but really you need the second C stick. And so if you're gonna get a new 3DS, like, this is one of those games you're like, what do I need a new 3DS for? They play the same games. Like, this is one of those ones where you'll want a new 3DS for it. All right, but one. Lorenzo, you played.
Yeah, I played The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt.
I'm very interested.
It's very exciting. I was very excited to do it. And I put about three and a half hours into it.
Wow.
And they set us off just from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So this kicks off, I don't even know how long after the second one. But it's pretty much a standalone game. So if you haven't played the previous games, it tells its own story pretty much. Right. So it sets you off, sets you up with all these characters that you're supposed to already know. But if you don't, then you get a sense of who they are and what you're doing. So you're kind of searching around for this chick named Yennefer.
Right. Geralt's always
Geralt's
always looking for you.
Long lost love that's been gone for the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
But you're like hot on her trail at the beginning of this game. I'm like, wow, this is really fast.
Great.
You know, she's in the next town. I just need to go there. So, the prologue part of it, you start off in this one, actually huge, tutorial area.
Right.
Where there's a town.
Is this like Dragon Age Inquisition, like hinterlands area where you're just like, I want to run around and pick weeds all day?
I would say it's probably yeah.
like on the
huge.
Scale.
It's
okay.
Huge.
Okay.
It's like nice. It's really big. I was running around the town and I looked at the map and I said, oh my god, like there's you get a horse. You get a horse in this game.
A horse.
And you definitely need that horse.
Horses are next
gen. If
you're
going anywhere, you're riding that horse because running around is just going to be too slow.
Do you know if he calls his horse Roach?
He does call his horse
Nice. That's canonical.
Oh, okay.
Geralt always calls his horses Roach.
Why is he called it? Isn't Roach a character in the
Roach is also a character in the second game, but I think that's more of a joke. Because it's already been established that Geralt calls all his horses Roach. So it's sort of a derogatory thing that he calls.
Okay. Well, anyway, so it's a big open world, and I was really surprised by how dense it is. Because you walk into this town, you really feel like it's a town. There's people everywhere. You could talk to, all these people. You could go into the inn. All these people, patrons of the bar, will, kind of hate you because you're a witcher and you're weird.
Yeah. And they hate weird in the Witcher universe.
You could play.
Cannot stand it.
They hate you play so cards much. With some scholar dude. Mm-hmm. You could talk to
Can you fight a dude?
The waitress. I think you could fight people
Do
in
you
the
like
bar.
The bar brawl?
Yeah. I punched a dude to death in the beginning.
Oh, my God.
And, people come up to you and say, oh, there's this griffin, going and attacking people. Around the town, can you take care of it? As Geralt, he's like, yeah, as long as you give me some money, you give me some money, I'll go kill this fucking griffin. But, there's all these quests and situations that just crop up, and there just seems like there's a ton to do. If you guys have played Dragon Age Inquisition, it kind of gives you that kind of feeling where there's the blacksmith's blacksmithing house burned down and you have to go figure out what happened there, and this guy's got a sick daughter and you need to get to the well, but that well is haunted by a noon wraith and you have to go hunt down this.
And then of course on your way to the well you're gonna run into this guy and you're gonna see that thing.
So there's just all this stuff to do, and it's really awesome, and everything's just really intricate. Hunting down the noon wraith and hunting down the griffin is really intricate as well. You do a lot of things with your Witcher sense. It's kind of like the Batman's vision mode.
Or the eagle vision from Asgreed.
Yeah. So, in order to hunt down a griffin, you need to figure out, what kind of griffin is it? Right. What's the sex of it? And, what are all of its weaknesses? And you have to actually read through the bestiary and, figure out its weaknesses, find the recipes for the potions to expose these weaknesses. And
they would do that a couple of times in the second game, and those are always my favorite, because they were always a side quest thing, but those are always my favorite, where you did have to read through the entry in this journal on this monster.
And it seems like that's more essential in this game, because I went and fought the Noon Wraith without doing anything, and it kicked my ass. I couldn't kill it. I tried really hard, and I was dodging all of its attacks and stuff, and it just kept on healing itself because I didn't have the potions and the bombs kill it, So, you really have to use the bestiary to do all that stuff.
That's
and
cool.
It's really crazy.
And so that comes out, it got delayed till May or something?
May, shit.
19th, but who cares? Like it'll be good when it's finally.
That game is going to be huge. It can get delayed as much as it needs to.
It's
going to
be awesome,
so
and it looks amazing on Xbox One. I played it on Xbox One. It looks great. Mm-hmm. On PC, it looks even better.
As expected,
it's totally built for PC. So CD if you Project have a Red. Good PC, I recommend just jumping on it.
But at least this time Project Red is working to have concurrent, like Witcher 3 comes out on the same like systems concurrently.
Yeah. And we have a bunch of Witcher features out on GamesRadar now. I wrote one up on hunting, which was really cool.
I know,
and
I think we had two go up this week.
Yeah, there was another preview.
Yeah, like nine. God, I can't remember it off the top of my head. The number nine was in it. But all right, we should get on.
What's it was nine times I, whoever that is, nine times I slacked off in The Witcher. That was the other one.
But, all right, we have a lot of other things to talk about this week because we had a good number of reviews for this thing. We're finally starting to get into releases. So let's start with Dave Roberts' review this week, and that was Grim Fandango, the remake for the PS4, I believe you reviewed it on.
Well, So Sony has this thing where if you you can digitally pre-order games, but the thing is like if you get a code for that, it doesn't unlock until Tuesday. So I basically like, but the Vita version worked fine, so I reviewed it on Vita and I played the PC version a bit, just to kind of get a sense of how the port worked. Mm-hmm.
Is it as good as it was 20 years ago?
So it's called the Remastered Edition, Grim Fandango Remastered. They fixed up a lot of the 3D modeling. So, like, the characters look cleaner, the lighting is better, but they didn't really touch the pre-rendered backdrops at all. So you have these, like, really, like, they still look fairly low texture because they look like they did in the 90s, but you have these, like, nice and clean-looking characters on these kind of muddy-looking backgrounds, and there's this weird disconnect there. Also, the game is just, it's really buggy. I don't remember it being this buggy. I remember being somewhat buggy, but I don't remember it crashing this often. Like, my Vita version crashed a couple times. PC version crashed a couple times. There was one part when I was playing the Vita version where there's a part near the end in year four where you have to your car is hooked up to a bunch of explosives and you have to solve the puzzle to do that. I won't spoil it, but you give an item to Glottis, your buddy, and what ends up happening is you walk up to him and he just starts spinning around in a circle, just spinning and spinning and spinning, and I can't pause the game, I can't open up my inventory, I can't back out of this conversation. It is just stuck. So I have to close my game and reopen it, and there's no autosave, so I had to replay a bunch of stuff.
Ooh.
Get to that point, and it happened again.
Nice.
So like I had to go to another room,
gotta report that book.
Kind of, and talk to him from a different angle.
Like a tester.
So, like, the game itself is still genius. It still has, like, a lot of the adventure game logic bullshit problems where you have to use, you know, like the rubber chicken with the pulley in it kind of stuff, where you have to use items with other items that would never go together in any other instance. But
you dropped out a second there.
Oh, sorry. Basically, like, it has the adventure game logic problem where you have to, you know, use items on other items that would never make sense in the real world, but because it's a LucasArts adventure game, that's, you know, it does. So
I sympathize with that, Dave, just because I've been playing a little bit on my own time, and there's definitely been some moments where it's like, okay, you need to, like, one situation was like, you need to plug up this thing, this machine. You need to break this machine by putting something in this tube. Oh, there's a fire extinguisher. I'm like, oh, I'll just go spray this shit in the fire extinguisher and that'll break it. And it's like, nope, you got to go down the street, grab this clown. He'll make you a balloon that's shaped like a cat. And then you go over here and it's like, what the hell? What is going on?
Yeah, lots of back and forth. Controls are still kind of awkward. I sound so down on this game, and I hate that. I hate that I'm so negative on it because it's one of those games. It's like you deal with all the crap because of how amazing the rest of it is.
It's really good.
Takes place in the Mexican underworld, very Day of the Dead influence, but it's also like very Raymond Chandler. You know, The Big Sleep,
Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, very film noir influenced. And there's literally nothing like it. The music is fantastic. Like, they actually re-recorded pretty much all of the music, and it sounds great, like, even now. The story is you know, it's still one of the best in the business. It's totally worth playing. It's just you have to suffer through a lot of crap to get to the good stuff.
All right. It's all kind of stuff we expected, I suppose.
Okay, so ultimately, what was your score?
3.5 out of 5.
Yeah, that sounds fair for, like, you. If what you suffer, you have to suffer, but you get great stuff for your suffering.
And that's a really old game being judged by modern standards, so that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, well, and it's also, like, I have a problem when you release a remaster that, like, doesn't work or has the same bugs as it did before.
You figure with Sony behind them, they could have done a little more bug testing before they put it out.
But the story behind the game is interesting because a lot of the code, a lot of the assets and stuff were lost to time because like LucasArts closed and they didn't have access to a lot of the stuff. So they had to basically like call up old employees like, hey, do you have these art files somewhere, like anywhere? So like the fact that this thing even exists at all is a marvel.
Yeah.
So there's that at least.
All right.
It's like a museum piece. Like it totally is worth checking out, but you know, it has aged.
Well, meanwhile, there's a brand new thing that came out this week that also involves dead things, and that is Dying Light, which we got a quick... That one came in kind of late.
Because of stuff and things.
Well, we just didn't... We didn't get an early review copy, like, which... You know, we don't feel like we're owed one by every game, but when a company doesn't send us an early review copy, that sets off alarm bells for me. I'm like... Why don't they want us playing this early?
I mean,
that's weird.
Even in the last couple months, it's been like, oh, that's why they didn't want us playing it early.
It wasn't. All right, so Matthew Elliott reviewed it for us as freelancer named Matthew Elliott. Just a quick gist of it, that he gave it 3 stars out of 5, and he felt that the game was, he compared it to pro wrestling or trashy B-movies of just like, this isn't high art, and it has a lot of problem, or it has like bad difficulty spikes and like rough around the edges, but it is fun. Like, it's trashy, dumb fun. Kind of like how the Dead Island games were, I believe, like in the same way.
I definitely... Yeah,
we played it a bit on the live stream this week, and it did have a little bit of jank to it, to the parkour. You know, you jump and, you know, feel like you totally missed a ledge, but then all of a sudden you pop up and grab onto it and pull yourself up. And but it is definitely fun to go smash zombies in the face, like in Dead Island, if you liked... That aspect of Dead Island, it's really fun to
I'm
get
getting
into
the sense Techland is not a bad developer, but they're not very good. Like, they're not very good at quality control.
They're stuck in kind of a rut, it seems like. Yeah, they're in a spot.
Their polishing stones are a little messed
polishing
up.
Polishing stones.
But, yeah, it's a decent
title.
It's a decent time.
I don't know if I'd pay $60 for it, but I bet if you can wait a month, you won't have to.
Though, I have heard some people say, and unfortunately we didn't get to the nighttime portions, really, but apparently nighttime is, like, insanely tense.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. And there's also the co-op mode, which is kind of weird because you have to download the Be a Zombie mode separately, but... The matchmaking was pretty terrible. I was trying to get into it yesterday, and it took like 3 hours to get into 4 or 5 games. So it was a lot of people dropping out, a lot of unpopulated games. So there's that.
Yeah, they can probably work on
that. Well, then lastly, we didn't score it yet because it's only the first episode, but you, Ashley Reed, reviewed Life is Strange.
I did. I reviewed episode 1, Chrysalis, which you're like, oh, dear. You hear that? You're kind of like, oh, no, hipsters. And
so it's made by Don't Nod, a bunch of hip French dudes who made Remember Me.
It is.
It's not surprising it has a hipster vibe.
It is, and they definitely, it gets more intense because they even told me, they're like, we wanted to focus on indie, everything, indie music, indie movies. We wanted to draw our inspiration from that, and you're like, oh no. But I think what makes this work is that they legitimately seem to love this material. It isn't just like, oh, we're so cool for knowing what this is. It's like, no, we actually like it, and that comes through. The world's really the world's really like colorful and interesting, even for being such a simple place. Mm-hmm. The characters get kind of cliche because it's like, oh, look, there's the bitchy rich girls who are mean for no reason, and there's the social outcast, and there's the religious kid who's quiet and sits in the corner, and there's the girl who smokes weed, whatever. But they kind of start to develop personalities as it goes on, so it's like, okay, there's room for this to grow as it goes on. And then they took probably what I thought was the best part of Remember Me, which was the memory remixes. I don't know if anyone remembers that.
Yeah, that was easily the best part.
Yeah, like where you got to reverse through time. They took that concept and made that the central gameplay mechanic.
That's
so
a smart move by them.
It really was. I was like, that's the best part, you guys. So you make decisions and you can rewind and remake the decision to make a different choice, which you would think would make it really easy, but there isn't really a situation where it's like, well, this is the good choice and this is the bad choice. Like, they have their ups and downs, and they also have long-term consequences that are kind of hard to foresee. Like, things you wouldn't necessarily expect to happen. Like, a situation that you're like, I made the right decision here. Way down the line, you're like, oh, no, that was a terrible choice. So it's doing some interesting things. I haven't scored it yet, like you said, because you don't really get the full picture from it, so I'm going to wait until the season is done before the scoring happens.
Have they said, like, how many episodes there are or what kind of schedule it's on?
I believe it's 5 episodes. They were very adamant it is going to be 6 weeks. 6 weeks between each episode. And they're like, it's never been done before, but we're going to do it. And I'm like, okay.
I'll
believe it when I see it. But if they can do it, that'll be great.
Yeah, to this point with episodic games, it's either been, well, there's ones that aren't actually episodic, like Half-Life, but then there's also, Telltale basically is on like a bi-monthly thing, but it's not to the number. Like, it's like, I think it's ready. Maybe we'll tell. And then you'll hope to hear something about a new episode for weeks. And then one day they're like, it's out tomorrow.
Yeah. The Wolf Among Us did that where they had like, they're like, oh, it's going to be a month between each episode. 4 months later, episode 2 of The Wolf Among Us. But in their defense, they apparently completely revamped the story in that time. So it's like, oh, that's not so bad, I guess.
But then, meanwhile, like the upcoming Resident Evil Revelations 2, like they're really just, they have a finished game and they're releasing it, a part of it, each week in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's no way, they're not making new stuff in between each week. It's just they're slowly releasing a thing they finished.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's what Don't Nod is doing with this, is that it's already done and they're just releasing it on a time schedule, but we'll see.
All right. So yeah, those are the big reviews of the week. Now we're going to take a break, and when we come back, the community segment and your answers to last week's question of the week. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Radio Radar 124. And now it's time for the community segment.
You paused.
Radio Radar.
Radio
stuff. If it's good enough.
It's such a great song that Dave Roberts didn't hear.
I just see Max dancing.
We
to nothing.
We sometimes like to dance on this. Some people put more work into the dance than others. All right, so last week's question of the week was, what is the favorite physical reward you've received for playing a game? Like, what's the favorite thing you got that was a real-life thing, kind of like Club Nintendo? A Club Nintendo thing would count among that. Actually, Mr. Roberts, do you have one that you would say?
Yeah. My Beautiful Joe bobblehead I got for pre-ordering Beautiful Joe.
That is awesome. I would I would kill for that.
Please don't kill me.
All right. So let's read off my favorite responders from this week. I'll start off here with the guy in the closet. Is my favorite physical game reward came with the pre-order of Skyrim, the only game I've ever pre-ordered. It was a fake parchment version of the region map. The fact of having a physical map of the game gets you inside the game, but having one that looked and felt like it was from the game instead of a modern glazed paper just made it so much more, it made me so much more immersed, even before putting the disc in my console. Besides, I'm a huge fan of TES, to the point that when they announced the anthology that comes with the maps for all the games, I was very tempted to buy one just for the maps. $80! Oh,
don't you have this? Point. Don't you have this, Lorenzo? I feel like you had this.
No, that's the War in the North, the Lord of the Rings.
Those are different
things.
A lot
of companies ripped off that. Well, a lot of companies were inspired by that parchment map idea.
But mine comes in a quiver.
Ooh.
It's like made out of arrows. It's neat.
I remember that. That was pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Max?
All right, so our next one is from Ocelot Fox. Because as we all know, an ocelot never lets its prey escape. The best physical reward in a game I've gotten is probably the set of 22 Persona Tarot cards I received with Persona 4 Arena Ultimax and Persona Q last year. I'm a huge fan of the Persona series, and I love that Atlus gave them away as a bonus for pre-ordering at no extra charge. They're wonderfully made copies of everyone's favorite deck of Arcana cards, and once I got them framed, made a fantastic Whoa. Addition to my living room. I think that's a pretty cool idea.
Oh, that is neat.
I got a copy of tarot cards, game-related tarot cards with, I think it was Tactics Ogre, Let Us Clean Together, gave you a deck of Arcana cards. Sense. And I would look at them, I was like, oh, these look cool, but I don't really know what to do with them.
That's what I
have Darksiders 2 tarot cards.
Ooh. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Very nice.
Of course.
I've got a Dishonored tarot cards. That's what we should all do. We should all get our respective gaming tarot cards.
Best gaming tarot cards. Ready, go.
Okay. Is that SEO?
Yeah, can we rank for that?
Yeah, maybe. We probably could. Dango Mushi says, I got an XXL Sonic the Hedgehog 2 t-shirt when I got the game on day one. Oh, I was a 9-year-old shrimp, so it was pretty much a wedding gown.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome.
They don't give t-shirts as much with pre-orders. Like in the 90s, I felt like I got a t-shirt with everything.
I bought Sonic Colors just for the Sonic hat.
That was a pretty cool hat.
I mean, GameStop
Sonic
has
Sonic Colors is not a bad game.
I never actually played that game. Oh. I just bought the hat, basically.
It's poser, fake gamer boy. Dango Mushi said, nope. Oh, damn it. G Luna 46 says, oh, and as for the question of the week, I'll go with my Fallout 3 lunchbox and Pip-Boy bobblehead. Still one of my favorite collector's editions. I even keep all the bottle caps from beers and sodas I drink and put them in a bag and put it in my Fallout 3 lunchbox.
That's pretty cool.
You never know.
That's clever.
And then lastly, God...
he's disappointed in us. Sorry, I'm like burped right in the middle of that.
I don't have many to choose from, but I'd have to say the hybrid Chimera figurine I got from my Resistance 2 Collector's Edition. For all the detail they put into it, I've always thought it was a really cool looking figure to have, especially as a fan of the series before it was killed off. I picked that one mainly because, like, whoever talks about Resistance? Like, nobody. It's weird to just find somebody who's like, I identify as a Resistance fan. I'm a Resistance fan.
People love that game, especially, one and two. Well, I mean, they did, like, when it was out, when, like, the hype was for it. I remember people talking about that constantly.
Well, this is a bigger thing, a bigger point I'd make about the difference between Nintendo and Sony is that, like, Sony went to all this trouble. Like, they build all these franchises, and then they kill them every generation. They're like, we want something new. Like, and that lets them be fresh, but that's why they have, like, such weird... People have weird nostalgia for their stuff. Unlike Nintendo, is like, oh, I love Mario. He was on everything. I love Zelda. It was on everything. Instead, it's like, well, I really like Naughty Dog's PlayStation 1 games. I like Naughty Dog's PS2 games. I like Uncharted. Like, it's just... You have this very, like, wide range of fans. Like, it makes it hard for people to care as much, I'd say. But anyway, so, the winner this week, I'm going to go with Ocelot Fox.
Wow!
Because I like the idea of you framing those arcana. So, as the winner, please email me at radioradar@gamesradar.com. Send an email there identifying yourself, telling me what systems you have, and I'll send you a thing.
A thing.
Ooh.
All right, so this week's question of the week is tied into the top seven, which is, what gaming cliche would you banish forever from games? Like, which one doesn't even have to be one on this list, but what gaming cliche? Now, I'll start first. Now, you guys might want to label me a social justice warrior for saying this, I would say I get a little tired of the damsel in distress. Like, I think before it was even named as, like, this is an anti-women trope, which I think is kind of true. I think the real reason is just, like, it's just so lazy. Why are you upset? The beautiful woman is in trouble. I have to save her. Like, that, it's just such an easy, like, quick way to be like, well, who do you have to save? The most beautiful woman ever.
I mean, what if she was ugly? Like, would that be a bit of a more of a moral dilemma, maybe?
Well, then it's a joke game like Fat Princess. Like that's the difference.
Why would anyone want to save an ugly girl?
But I did. But I'd at least, I don't know, like save your dad sometimes or something, or save your mom, save your family. It doesn't have to be just a pretty girl who will reward you with a kiss. Like that's, I know Mario is one of the guiltiest of this and popularized it. But like, that's why I preferred in, well, so 3D World, Peach gets to just hang out with you and help instead of getting trapped at the very beginning of the game. But then you have to save this. The Prixies? Sprixies? Not Prixies.
No.
The Sprixies, which are basically eight princesses that are seven little princesses that need to be saved. So maybe not that progressive. But, all right. Anybody else?
I think I might follow yours up a little bit, Henry. Something similar, but not quite the same. I think TV Tropes actually has a name for this called the faux action girl, which is basically a female character who is supposed to be like, oh yeah, I'm badass, I'm so cool, but she is completely incompetent and needs to be saved at every turn and never does anything even remotely useful. I want that gone. It's so annoying because you're like, oh, here's an actually legitimately cool character and they do nothing. And I don't mean like the healer character, because that's actually something. You've accomplished something for the team. It's literally just that you pretend to be badass, but then it's like, well, we don't actually want to give her anything to do, so...
Yeah, Shadow of Mordor definitely had that with that, I guess, love interest you call her for the dude, and that she seems super tough and a badass, and then, nah, she got kidnapped too. She got kidnapped
it's
by
like,
the
orcs. Need to go save her. It's like, motherfucker. I love that game, but we're picking on it so much. But what can you do when it's right there?
I mean, I will I hate to ape from my own list, but the one that I enjoyed writing on here the most was number three, the dead parents one, the dead parents' wives and families. I just feel like that's such a cheap cop-out, just like a cash-in way to garner sympathy and set up your character with some sort of motivation. It's like there's so many more – I'm sure there are so many more fun and creative ways you could set up an interesting character other than – feel bad for him. His parents are dead.
Mm. Or have a different driving force than just revenge.
Yeah.
Different driving force than Batman.
Revenge is a motivation.
We're going with storytelling cliches?
Gaming cliche.
Yeah. Save points. Just give it all save points. You don't want those
anymore.
I was going
to say, like, flashing weak zones. I kind of, we're all... Like, we're good at games at this point.
Games are like 30 years old now.
Let us figure it out. Like, let us, just figure out.
I think that,
stop holding our hands.
There's a lot of
hand-holdy
stuff.
Get up on the Hydra's back. Get up on the Hydra's back.
All the hand-holding cliches of, like, you know.
Or, like, your NPC partner be like, maybe you should shoot him in the legs. Yeah. Ooh, he might be weak there.
All that kind of nonsense. But also, like, the Call of Duty thing of letting you play as a person only to kill them off, only just, you know, so it'll be that much more dramatic.
For the purposes of drama.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Roberts, you have one?
Yeah. On the same token as the audio logs, I'm really sick of seeing graffiti on the walls in video games.
But you can read it, and it's a story.
Yeah, like, you know, immersion gameplay, you have to solve that problem of telling a story while actually letting someone play a game and not ripping them out of control. But also, like, Alien Isolation is just filled with graffiti, and it's who would have time to find a bunch of spray cans and write "the end is real fucking nigh" while an alien is chasing you down? Like, it would never happen. It's one of those lazy things. It's like, well, of course there's graffiti because this place has to look like decrepit and broken.
I like the games, they don't do this in enough games, but where the character sees it, like they're projecting it words onto walls, but they're not really there.
Oh, Splinter Cell.
Yeah,
Conviction.
Splinter Cell did it, yeah.
And the most recent SSX does that, actually. Not for like storytelling, but just to like warn you of hazards and stuff. They'll project words onto the snow.
You know what I'd like to see a game, and this would be so hard it would not even be worth anyone's time, but I would like to see a game that did completely unique graffiti in every location so you never saw the same one twice, because that'll really rip you out of things, right? You see like one cool bit of graffiti, you're like, wow, that's really crazy, and then you see the same one like a little bit through the area, you're like, well, fuck, okay.
Thanks, he's run out of ideas over here.
That guy gets around.
All right, so put your answers to this week's question of the week in the comments for this episode page on GamesRadar.com, and that's episode 124. But you'll see it on the front page probably if you go to it over the weekend. But I guess that's about it for this week. Just again, and a reminder one more time, that Twitch stream every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 3:30 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. Check it out. We're having a lot of fun there. And also, be sure to watch the
First to Five.
You guys should do Blitzball at some point. It'd be hilarious.
I haven't played that in forever.
So yeah, check out all those things. And we have a lot more exciting things coming your way. And until next time, Radio Radar out!